This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Otipoti, Dunedin. And I am joined from Whakatane by Dr. Mawira Karatai.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. Summer has arrived.
Summer has arrived. Well, it's kind of very still spring here in the Eastern Bay. 18 degrees today. First day of the new mountain biking season. So my sausages and onions are all ready and I'm going this afternoon to go and feed a lot of families.
That sounds fun.
It is.
So, what will they do without you? Are you going to keep doing that when Jack flies the coop?
Yeah, I have to because it's part of my identity. I'm Dr. Sausage.
I wasn't going to say that. So, who are we introducing today?
Today, it is my absolute great pleasure to introduce a very clever thinker, actually. Fran O'Brien is the very first student for the 2025 series of Coming Up for Air. And Fran, it is wonderful to have you here joining us today. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome, Fran. Where did you grow up, Fran?
So I grew up in Auckland, Takapuna. So that's North Shore.
What was it like growing up there?
Oh, pretty peaceful, to be honest. We've got some very nice beaches, bipolar weather, but all in all, pretty good, I'd say.
And it may be where you're headed, but what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a lawyer or a trader. And so I've taken the trading path because I didn't much fancy law.
What appealed about trading?
Good question, actually. I'm not too sure at the time, but now it would definitely be the international experience. There's no trading in New Zealand, so I'd have to go overseas to do it, and I feel like it's just a very good excuse to get out of the country for a bit.
It's not the sort of thing that you would think would get much publicity or get into your space as a kid growing up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. A couple family friends were ex-traders, so they told me about it, and that's how I learned about it. And then I think the general public's first introduction to it would have been when they watched The Wolf of Wall Street, I'd say.
That didn't put it in a very good light, though.
No, it didn't. But before I watched that is when I was talking to my family friends, and they seem very, very, like very, very interesting people.
And watching The Wolf of Wall Street didn't put you off?
Yeah. No, I wouldn't say so. I mean, those were the 80s, right, Sam? It's a different time, different place now.
So what do you, other than overseas experience, what are you hoping to do with that? What like in the bigger picture?
Well, yeah, I'm not actually sure if I'll end up being a trader even. I hope to work in some form of ESG sector as well. So I feel like for me, I just want to get experience in as many places as possible in the finance industry And then we'll see what I enjoy most and where that leads. But there is a couple other paths I would quite like to go down, like the energy sector or the ESG sector.
What's the ESG?
So environmental social governance. So it's to do with how you run a company well.
So you are doing a paper, I've forgotten what it's called. Let's pretend it's called Sustainable Business.
Yeah.
Is that a compulsory part of your program, or did you choose to do that?
It's chosen, yeah.
So why that?
Well, I've taken quite a few papers to do with ESG management and sustainability. This paper actually followed on quite nicely from another paper that I did in third year, which was also a chosen paper, not compulsory. And so I felt that it would stem quite well into this.
Alrighty, let's take the first of your music choices. Stan Walker, Take It Easy. Why this one?
Great New Zealand artist. What more to say?
Staring at the ground, take hold for the part. Little by little, someone blows the whistle, hit the matter in the end. So just slow it all down, slow it all down. You gotta take it easy, easy. Live your life. Don't let any kind of weather, you and me together, we'll be.
People who have been interviewed through this podcast series, where is their happy place? Where is yours?
Oh, definitely on Takapuna Beach. It's right next to my house, like 30-second walk down the road from me. And I don't do any running in Dunedin because it's far, far too cold. But whenever I go back up to Auckland, you know, it was one of my sports growing up. It was rugby and running were my two sports. And now whenever I go up, it's instantly every single day running up and down that beach. It's perfect.
When you were at school, who were the people that inspired you, like who helped you to get to where you are today?
I've always been very inspired by my dad, to be honest. He's a really, really creative person, but we're also very different in a lot of ways. I'm a bit loud and outgoing. He's extremely quiet and staunch, but I feel like he's a very, very cool guy. So definitely him, I'd say the most. But also one of my coaches from rugby. He just knew his stuff.
Did anyone ever ask you what you wanted to be when you grew up, as you were growing up?
Yes, they did. But I feel like, again, it changes a lot, you know, as you grow up. Like I said, I wanted to be a lawyer at one point, and then I wanted to be a trader at one point. I probably wanted to be a scientist at one point too. I just don't remember it. But now, you know, I'm still thinking about being a trader at some point. But, you know, that could chop and change because I also want to do other things.
What do you want to do? What are the other things?
What I mentioned before. So that was the ESG. Yeah. It's stuff to do with governance mainly, and running a company is what I'm interested in.
If I could magic you into the future 10 years from today, what does your life look like? Where are you and what are you doing?
Well, It will depend on the opportunities I get at work, but hopefully running my own company.
Right. Well, that seems really cool.
Do you have a company in mind?
Well, I feel like the AI market is growing and it's great, but it's getting quite flooded now. And I think it's something that everyone's trying to do. And I think in 10 years, the landscape of finance and AI will be completely different. I've had a few ideas about some fintech, which is financial technology, but they would all involve AI. And I think having an idea now but planning to start be running the company in 10 years, between now and then the tech could be completely obsolete. And so in some ways it's not worth thinking about the exact product or idea that I want to sell, because everything's changing so much now. Like this graduate role I'm going into is like an accounting role starting next year. And I think in 5 years, it won't be a role anymore, because I think AI will just be able to do it better with less mistakes.
So you've got a job, you've got a role that you're going into that's all done and dusted?
All done and dusted, yeah.
That's outstanding.
Thank you.
So accounting, was that something that interested you? Because finance and accounting, vaguely related, but not the same.
Yeah, it's just different ways of putting together numbers.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. And where will you be?
At KPMG.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
What a massive achievement.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. And then in there, it's, you know, I'll do some chopping and changing between departments, maybe. We'll have to see again, but.
So, Frano, you have, you're the first person in your cohort to be introducing your Coming Up for Air podcast. So, who did you interview?
So, I interviewed John Berry, who is the CEO and leader of Pathfinder Asset Management.
And what was the reason for interviewing John?
So I had this thought about greenwashing, and it's been kind of a problem for a very long time, is where investors want to put their money into green funds or green places, but they don't really trust a lot of these places in the finance industry. And where that stems from is because the finance industry at its heart in a lot of ways is just, how can I make the most money and bugger off everyone else? And so a lot of these companies, they say, oh, I mean, you'll hear John talk about it. He said there was one fund who said, oh, you know, sustainable investments, right? And then he talked to the leader of that management fund, and he said, well, no, what I was actually meaning was sustainable returns, right? So that's very misleading, and it's greenwashing because it tricks investors into thinking you're doing something green, but you're actually not. So I wanted to bring this to him, and obviously he's someone who's been in the industry and in the green investment industry for so long, so I figured he would have a very good outlook on this issue.
Perfect.
Hello and welcome to the Coming Up for Air Contemporary Issues podcast. Today I'm joined by Sustainable Fund Manager John Berry, and I'm going to discuss with him ethical investing and greenwashing. Recently, a paper by Gaysim, Herve and Marsat has come out detailing the problems green funds are facing, with companies greenwashing making people more hesitant to put their money into green areas. I'm going to discuss his experience, troubles with and real world examples of greenwashing and how this is impacting his area of expertise. Without further ado, let's get into it.
John, how are you doing?
Good, thanks, Frano. Good.
Right, thanks. Now, John, you're a very interesting man. So would you like to tell the audience a little bit about what you do for a living?
Sure. And thanks for calling me interesting. So I'm John Berry. I'm co-founder and CEO of Pathfinder Asset Management. We're a fund manager. We run managed funds and KiwiSaver, and our focus is on ethical investing. So we believe that through investing, we can have a positive impact on the world and at the same time can generate great returns for our investors.
Awesome. Thanks. Like I said, interesting man. Now, if you could sum it up just generally, how do you think you got where you are today?
I mean, it's interesting with like the work I'm doing, I feel is very purpose driven. So it's important work. It has a positive impact, not on just the savings for individuals, but also on people, plant and animals. So
yeah.
I feel like it's really important mission driven work. A lot of people find their purpose in life through a single event that happens, and it's essentially a life-changing event and changes their life and helps them find purpose. I've sort of got there by a series of nudges right through life, through what my father taught me, experiences I've had in the workplace, my own experience with investing and understanding how investing has an impact on the world. So for me, it's been a whole series of events that have pushed me in this direction of wanting to invest with a conscience.
Okay, awesome. If you could think back in one of those nudges over your life that led you to or down the sustainability route and kind of shaped your views, what do you think that nudge would be? And how do you think your views have changed since then?
Look, I think one really critical nudge for me was when I read a report around a study done on the Kermadec Trench and the Mariana Trench. So these are the deepest parts of the ocean. They're over 10 kilometres underwater, which means if you got Mount Everest and put it in the water, you've still got about another 3 kilometres to go. Yeah. So these places should be completely pristine, completely untouched. But when they sent probes down there, they found the human or the man-made toxins they were looking for were off the scale. In fact, they described it as worse than a polluted industrial river for the concentrations of the pollutants. And, you know, I remember that moment and my head was just spinning going, oh my God, you know, we're impacting the peaks of the earth through climate change, and this place on earth, the depths of the ocean that should be completely pristine, is also being impacted by humanity. And, you know, that at that moment we were already investing ethically, but at that moment I thought that's all we should be doing with the business, and we should go harder and have more impact.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. Do you think that if you could give just your average everyday person a simple piece of advice to live more sustainably, do you think you have any like a small piece of advice?
Yeah, look, one way I explained it is because I speak to a lot of people who feel like they can't have an impact on the world and can't have an impact on their community. And the way I explain it is there are three ways all of us can have an impact. Firstly, how we spend our time. So we can mentor young people, we can volunteer for charity. So how we spend our time absolutely has an impact on communities. Secondly, how we spend our money. So we understand the connection with sustainable consumption of how we spend our money and the choices we make do have an impact. And thirdly, how we invest our money. So And we often think of money as just a tool. It's a store of value. It's a medium of exchange, is how economists would explain it. But I actually see money as being a force for good if it's used consciously. So what you invest in or choose not to invest in will allocate capital and will have an impact on businesses and on the real world.
Yeah, awesome. So an academic paper recently that came out earlier this year by Gaysim, Herb and Marsat talks about how greenwashing can actually be a barrier to ethical investing. For example, for Pathfinder, and that is as people become more hesitant about putting their money in green funds because of the risk of greenwashing. Do you see this as a problem that is going to get worse or better in the future?
You're right. Greenwashing is essentially about trust and transparency. So consumers and investors being able to trust the information they're getting and also having transparency to look at what is the investment process? What is in a portfolio? The thing that's really helpful in New Zealand around that is a charity called Mindful Money. And Mindful Money is a website, mindfulmoney.nz, is a website you can go to, put in your KiwiSaver, and it will tell you the human rights abuse, the environmental degradation, the weapons investments, the animal testing, the fossil fuels. It will list them all. And will give you a sense of, you can then judge, does this KiwiSaver provider meet my values? And I think a tool like that, an independent tool like that, is really helpful in terms of providing transparency and investors know they can trust it because it's independent. We've had a challenge with a couple of our ads. Where if you think of our investment process, we have a investment policy, which defines how we invest. Secondly, you have a investment portfolio, which is the stocks you actually hold. And then thirdly, you have the advertising and how you tell that story. And when we talked earlier about the animal testing, one of our ads said, we don't invest in animal testing, and yet we have these few exclusions. And so in that ad, we should have had an asterisk and said, we do have exceptions to the general rule that we don't invest in animal testing. And it's sort of, I suppose the, which is absolutely a mistake on our part, and we've learned from that. The thing with greenwashing is, providers just have to provide full information and full transparency so investors know they can trust.
And yeah, so in this research, it showed that transparency and clear reporting reduces concerns about greenwashing, then makes it more likely for people to put their money in green funds. Now, you said you'd learned from that ad. And do you feel like now you're at a stage where your fund approaches communication in a way so that investors feel confident about the impact of their money?
Yeah, it's, I suppose, a couple of things, Frano. One is there isn't consistency across the industry in how and definitions used and the way things are explained. And I think that it's slightly problematic. From our perspective, from Pathfinder's perspective, I think we've got clearer and clearer in terms of how we explain ourselves. And often it means you use a lot more words. Often it means you've got to provide more information because there is nuance sometimes in the investing, or there's detail you need to share. And it does mean people may need to read more, and everyone's time poor and they want things to be simpler. But you have to over-explain or over-disclose. And it requires a lot of skill in the communication team as well to be able to do that in a way that's relevant and as succinct as possible. But yeah, look, I think we're doing a pretty good job of that at Pathfinder.
At Pathfinder, have you found that there have been misleading claims made by companies which you were invested in or which you were thinking of investing in?
Yeah. Look, I can give an example of a company where I spoke to the CEO and questioned them on their sustainability report, and they talked about how important it was that they worked to improve biodiversity, which was an interesting statement in their sustainability report. But I asked them, give me some projects that prove that you're committed to improving biodiversity, and they couldn't come up with a single project, and they were slightly embarrassed about that. they also, you know, when they were aligning their work with the SDGs, the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, and this was a business that grows things, so it produces food. And with wet parts of the globe getting wet and dry parts getting drier, you would have thought climate change and the SDG around climate action was really critical for that business, but they never mentioned it. And to me, that sort of spoke to their to a weakness in their risk, essentially, the risk assessment in the business. You know, that's probably changed a bit now with the climate reporting requirements in New Zealand, which have come in recent years. But, you know, those are examples of businesses sort of making claims where you wonder if the marketing department or sustainability team has wanted to make these claims, but they're not really backed up by deep thinking within the business.
Yeah. So for example, those two companies that you just mentioned, and like for this applies, I suppose, for other companies as well, if they've like later found to have overstated or changed their green credentials, how typically do you respond as a fund manager?
Look, it depends on context, because Air New Zealand had had ambitious targets to reduce carbon and then came out and said, we're just not going to achieve it. You know, we're not getting the new technology we need. And they got slammed a bit in the media, but I was kind of accepting in that, because I looked at the sustainability report the year earlier and they had flagged that it was getting harder for them to achieve their goal. And then the next year they changed their goal. But in some ways I respect companies that are genuinely ambitious and set themselves really ambitious targets, as long as they've got a credible pathway to achieve it. And reality may change, and reality may mean they don't reach that target. But as long as they're ambitious and they have a credible plan to achieve it, I'm okay with that. So, you know, and that really comes down to authenticity and trust in the leadership and the business. So there are, you know, I'd have zero tolerance for companies that intentionally make statements that are misleading, zero tolerance for that. But companies that make claims that they believe are achievable and they are working to achieve them, but they don't actually achieve because, you know, the real world is harder, or there are events that happen, or floods or whatever it may be, you know, you can understand things change and don't work out as people expect. You know, it's often how do they deal with that? How do they disclose that? How do they own that problem when it becomes a problem?
And so for those that might mislead with bad intentions, is divestiture, for example, something that you would look at?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, within our toolbox, we can engage with a company to understand them and encourage change. But ultimately, if we're not happy with the company, we sell it. And so if a company doesn't meet our ethical investment policy, divestment of it is always an option.
So over time, do you think that action like engaging or divesting over time could have an impact against greenwashing by punishing companies for misleading their stakeholders?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. The companies, you know, engagement makes companies aware that the people invested in them are demanding better or want explanations. And divestment, particularly when you make it public, like if we divest a company and we explain it to our investors, it makes it very public, and so the company knows we've sold. Now, an international company won't care if Pathfinder sells our holding in them, but a local company will. And you know, a good example, I suppose, is a week ago, the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth Fund, so this is the largest sovereign wealth fund in the world, $2 trillion fund, they sold their holding in Caterpillar. And so Caterpillar makes bulldozers. The bulldozers have been weaponized. So they're made for civilian use, but they have been weaponized and used in Gaza essentially as a weapon. And the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth Fund said the company is not doing enough to stop that use. And a number of fund managers have been engaging with Caterpillar over a number of years to try and get Caterpillar to take ownership of how that product is being used. At Pathfinder, we divested Caterpillar in November 2023 for that very reason. And the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth Fund has done so in the last week. So, I mean, that's a really high profile example of that made the media around the world.
Yeah, I've actually heard bits and pieces of Caterpillar. I think last time we spoke, you mentioned something as well. Something else that I heard you say earlier, which is that about the regulations being quite good in New Zealand to guard against greenwashing. Because, for example, like a recent example of greenwashing, I think was this year in April, Reuters reported that DWS, which was like a big asset manager for Deutsche Bank, was fined like 25 million euros by German prosecutors for misleading their investors about how green its ESG investment practices were. Obviously, this is one example of the legal system working. But overall, do you think the legal system has been doing an adequate job at protecting against greenwashing? And I'll ask that about internationally and domestically.
Internationally, we've been seeing more action around greenwashing. And you only have to look across the Tasman in Australia, and several managers in Australia have ended up in court. So the frontline regulator or the frontline policeman in financial markets in New Zealand is the FMA. And so the FMA, you know, has put greenwashing forward as one of the issues that they're really concerned about and they're looking into. So it's it's being prioritised by them. I mentioned earlier, you know, a couple of ads we had run in New Zealand, and the FMA picked us up on that. So in New Zealand, yes, it is. You know, fund managers in New Zealand are well aware of it, and the FMA is on watch for it. Globally, I would say the same for the jurisdictions that I sort of follow, which are, the UK, Europe, and the US and Australia. In the EU as well, there are, quite strict regulations around how you can describe your funds and the labelling you can use. And so the fund name essentially is marketing, right? How you call a fund, and if you use the word sustainable in it, so there are rules, quite strict rules in the EU that govern how you can name your fund now. So we don't have the equivalent in New Zealand. So terms like, you know, we use the term ethical because we want people to understand it's values-based, but the terms ethical and responsible and sustainable are not actually defined in New Zealand. And sustainable, when I was talking to one fund manager, because they called their fund sustainable, and it just looked like a bit of a normal fund to me. It didn't look like it had much in the way of sustainability metrics, and I asked them, what do you mean by sustainable? You know, do you mean you're trying to save the planet, which is how most people would interpret that word. And they said, no, what we mean by sustainable is sustainable future cash flows of the companies we invest in, which is a very different thing. And it's sort of playing on the ambiguity of the word sustainable.
Yeah, I think in pretty much all cases, that would be considered misleading, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think in some instances, the legal system has kind of fallen a bit short of greenwashing. For example, towards the end of 2024, Coca-Cola very quietly dropped a target which had promised 25% of its packaging to be reusable by 2030. And The Guardian reported on this, saying it was like a masterclass in greenwashing, because switching the target changed the company's focus away from reuse to recycled, which is obviously a much, much easier target, one which they've already met. And so this was like done so quietly that it was essentially having no brand impact on them. And I was wondering if you thought that there is a feasible way in which these actions could be regulated, because obviously this is something that is so hard to regulate, because, you know, if they can't do it, they can't do it. But, you know, in your opinion, is there some kind of action or fine or something that can take place to at least regulate this kind of thing?
Yeah, that's a tough one. And we don't invest in Coca-Cola, so I wasn't aware of that. But, I suppose the best thing is education and awareness and consistency across the industry. So a regulator can put out guidance, and that's really well read and used by the industry to adjust their practices. So that's probably the best place to start, is for really clear guidance to be issued and renewed often. And the FMA has given guidance in New Zealand around, how do you think about ethical investing and how do you describe ethical investing? So, you know, that's probably a really good place to start, is because the law is never going to keep up or never going to often be specific enough. It will often be quite general, but the guidance from the regulator can be quite specific and quite up to date.
Yeah, I think it's becoming such a big part of investing now, making sure you're not misleading and sticking with what you're saying you're going to do especially. So I thought that, you know, Coca-Cola thing specifically was quite interesting. Awesome. Well, thank you very, very much, John. I appreciate your time. You've been so helpful and insightful into greenwashing, and I hope everyone listening appreciates that as well.
Nice one. Thank you for including me, Frano. It's an important conversation. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, and I'll speak to you next time.
Nice one. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.
That was really interesting. I've met John, sat at a table with him a few times over the years while I've been sitting on Bay Trust, and he is a very deep-thinking, sensible human being. So it was really lovely to hear your interview with him. What was your big takeaway from the interview?
Yeah, I think something from the finance industry is that a lot of these green funds and can be looked down upon by other bigger funds who aren't green, because they think, oh, you can't make money while also investing green. And I think John did a really good job of explaining how it is completely feasible to do this. So maintaining some ethical boundaries, or just maintaining ethical boundaries and also making money for your investors at the same time. And I think he's been very intelligent and creative with how he's managed his fund and what he excludes and includes.
Do you think there's enough of that thinking in the industry?
I don't know. There is. It's definitely something that has just been getting bigger and bigger year on year on year on. Like we've seen the introduction of green bonds and stuff now. And so there's things on in a governmental aspect and things on a people and societal aspect. Both of these things are making the green and ESG sector a lot bigger and more important. But it's not where it needs to be yet. But I have good faith that it will get there.
How does it make you feel, though, like as a young person, knowing the world that you're inheriting to lead, that there's still this, there's a whole lot of dishonesty in the world around that, we all know that there is a need for change, and it seems like people take advantage of that for their own ends.
Yeah, how does that feel? I mean, not great, but I think in New Zealand, we really have it in many ways better than the overseas corporate sector, in terms of if you look at our progression in this space to overseas, and for example, in the US, we're increasing at such a better and steeper trajectory than other countries. And so while we're not there, it is good to see, you know, once I come into it and my generation comes into it, I think this impact will be even bigger. And then hopefully by the time we're all said and done, it is where it needs to be.
I agree with you, actually. And I know that sometimes people get a bit pissy about, we just put so much pressure on the next generation to make the change. And we do, there's no doubt about it. But that's because we kind of have to, because you're inheriting the problem. So we've got to make sure that you've got the skills and the capabilities to do that. Are we properly preparing your generation to take on the challenges that you're growing up into?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think the universities and just our education system has been getting a lot better at that. I don't know if you know Sebastian, the finance lecturer, Sebastian Garrett.
I sure do. Yeah, he's amazing.
I've been taking his papers and stuff. So the 300-level paper into the master's level paper. And so, yeah, I mean, we've been all properly informed about the green space in the finance realm.
John was talking about the impact that the learning about the Mariana Trench had on him.
Yes.
And that the impact of that is evocative, it's emotional, it's a story. Mm. How do we mix that with the numerical and perhaps the AI processing automated world?
What do you mean by the emotional side of it with the numbers and business side of it.
Yeah, I mean, if it's something like learning about the Mariana Trench has changed his whole outlook.
Yeah,
it's difficult to think about writing a computer program that's going to be doing the analysis on stock trends or whatever it is.
Yeah,
how do those two worlds interface?
Well, I mean, cleaning up the ocean costs money, and finance is the business of money. And I think AI has been sorely under. I think our thinking of AI needs to change in a lot of ways as well. Because right now, right, people are using it to write their essays at university, using it to do their jobs for them, and using it to gather information, etc. But I think AI could be the future of a green world and landscape in the finance industry and environmentally as well. We could do so much with automation for our oceans and for our animals.
I liked what he was talking about, the ad that they used that didn't quite work. I've written down ad asterisks.
Very honest of them.
Yeah, and that nuance about the... It's not black and white.
It's not.
And so not only are the decisions getting more complicated, but the communication of those decisions is getting more complicated.
Absolutely. It's so, so tough, especially from a legal standpoint in terms of what the federal bodies can regulate and can't regulate. And so they're kind of in a really weird balance where they want to regulate as much as possible to keep it fair on the consumer, right? But they also don't want to be too hands-on with everything, right? Because people have to figure this out for themselves and abide by those rules. And they're kind of just like a step in when things go too far, like a slap on the wrist. But in a lot of ways, this is also causing problems.
Let's take Tahu's thought of the day.
Bubble sprite of the wild coasts, secluded inlets, and forest and beaches of Otago Peninsula, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu McKenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nam aroha nui, kia koutou, ko tahua ho. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars, in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are, whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough. We've had to navigate so many new ways of doing, being, seeing, feeling. And of course, for us all, this means it's so important to give ourselves and each other the time, the space, the care, the compassion, the love, the understanding that we all so dearly need and can innately provide. I know for myself, of course, the living world is always a great comfort and source of inspiration. And I love the opportunity and the privilege to speak with you all as part of Blowing Bubbles. Very grateful to Sam and the whole team for having me. And of course, the show has been illuminating our consensus reality for many years now. And it's wonderful to have been part of this journey since the beginning. I'm so grateful. And at this time in my life, I'm embarking on a new adventure to help the Hoiho. And this all came to be because I had a prophetic dream about the Hoiho, and I was standing on a headland looking at these beautiful rock formations, the pyramids, at Orkia or Victory Beach, out here on the Otago Peninsula. And I was looking at these pyramids, these volcanic mountainous structures from the seaside, from an angle I had never viewed them from before. And I was gazing up on them, and I was talking to a Swedish scientist lady about the yellow-eyed penguin's gut microbiome. And so I have been called to help them. And of course, this Swedish scientist lady will arrive at some point. And a few months after I had that dream, I met the owners of the Otago Shore and Land Trust, and I began the process of moving from my heart's home, Orokonui, to this new workplace, and it's been really fascinating for me. And I'm now setting up the education program for the Opera, the Monarch, which is the wildlife cruise boat, and Whingatui glasshouses, where we're growing all the native trees to reforest the 257 hectares of penguin habitat out at the Opera. So it's a very exciting journey for me. And of course, within this whole process, I've had to really trust in the tohu that I've received, the signs and signals that I've received from the universe and from the living world. And of course, humans are a big part of that, and it's been wonderful as I have been embarking on these new directions that people have come to me and helped me and shared their wisdom and their metodika with me, including about the microbiome. And so, of course, this has got me thinking about many different things that I want to share with you, but in the main way that I think we live, sometimes it can be hard for us to see the connections and the impact that we have every day. And, you know, if we go more deeply into these ideas about the microbiome, we see that our own lives and our actions every day are part, of course, of a much wider web of symbiosis and monarchy, of relationship, of exchange, of interchange, and that our environment is responding to us constantly. And, you know, there's a beautiful Mataraka Māori concept of Mati Mati One, and this process by which we walk on the earth and we shed our skin and we shed our essence, and the earth responds and the earth gives us what we need. And so, you know, I'm really enjoying that process at the moment in my own life. So I really hope for you, as you're journeying through your day, you can see the ways in which your environment is responsive to you, with the other life forms around you picking up on the signals that you're giving out and coming back to you, meeting your needs, often in unexpected ways, but in ways that are always a pleasure to recognise. And I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We are talking with Franno Ryan. Franno, do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
Not really. I think it's different for everyone. Some people are very focused on the future aspect, the now aspect, and the present. Sorry, the historical aspect. Some people are more focused on the ocean. Some are more focused on the land. But I think sustainability just means making a better future for everyone.
If business has got us into this mess, can it get us out?
I think so.
Why is that?
Again, it costs money to do everything. And I mean, if people, especially in my generation, start shaping up and understanding the problems that we're facing, especially with the Paris Agreement and what our projections want to be and what they're actually going to be, I think if enough people care, we can do anything.
What happens when being sustainable, I know it's going to take money to make it happen, but doing the sustainable option just isn't a viable option in terms of if we look at it purely from a financial perspective?
So if we don't have enough money to make the sustainable option work?
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of thought gone into degrowth options, though I think a lot more thought would have to go into degrowth options before we could make them economically viable for everyone.
Maybe that's where your business future is, making degrowth work.
Yeah, I mean, that would probably have to be put to an economist rather than a financier.
Some questions to end the show. Not very much time to do them, so we're going to have to wriggle. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Well, it's going to be getting through this year smooth sailing. I thought there were going to be a lot of bumps along the way, but honestly, it's been very enjoyable and smooth year. So I think that's been the biggest shock to me.
What's your superpower?
Math brain.
Math brain. Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Yeah.
Maybe you should put those two the other way around.
your superpower is you're an activist. No, that doesn't make sense.
No.
Not just a maths brain, I think. A maths brain who can communicate.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? I'll take that. Yeah.
So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
Good question. I think I just want to be successful. I want to be successful, not necessarily in a monetary way either. There's a lot of different definitions for successful, and I think we find success in where we want to find success.
Going for a swim on Takapuna Beach would be pretty successful.
Yeah, especially on a hot summer day.
So what challenge are you looking forward to over the next year or so?
Definitely starting my job.
Yeah. And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Live somewhere warm.
Mawera claims to live somewhere warm. Mawera.
I do live somewhere warm in the sunny Eastern Bay of Plenty. It is a beautiful day here.
How hot did you say? 19 degrees, right?
Yeah.
20 here.
Yeah, but it'll get, yes, that is true, but it doesn't get to -3 in the mornings in Whakatane.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and your kiwi fruit aren't germinating because of it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's problematic. Franno, it has been a joy to have you in the class. I've found you to be so easy to engage with, and I've watched you engage really positively with your classmates as well. You are a very good human being, and I cannot wait to see what you do with your life. Congratulations on your new job. Well done on the beautiful work that you've produced, and all the best for your future.
Thank you very much. That means more than you could know, Maura.
Thank you. We are going out to your second music choice, which is 660's Vibes.
Strong, the room was kind of hazy. Been smoking, drinking lately, and then you turned around. I looked you up and down, just asked my heart about it. It's going crazy. I'm sending all these vibes to you. I'm a loaded gun, got my aim on you. I'm lucky that my wish came true. It turns out that you ain't bulletproof.
I wanna be a one and only, so I'm sending you these vibes, all these vibes, all these vibes, all these vibes. I wanna be a one and only, so I'm sending you these vibes, all these vibes, all these vibes, all these vibes.
And then the moment came, it took my breath away. Not just a pretty face, I ain't that type to change, but I'm a sucker for someone with something more. Just ask my heart about it, still going crazy. I'm getting all these vibes from you. Got the loaded gun, I hope your aim is true. Nothing else that I can do. It turns out
sending you these vibes, all these vibes, all these vibes, all these vibes. I wanna be your one and
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. Today, Fran O'Ryan brought us his contribution of Coming Up for Air. With Muira Karatai, I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Mighty Wild.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.